Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Newell's got a little time off. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be with you here on WWL. Today, we're going to have some great conversation. Helena Moreno, New Orleans City Councilwoman, will be joining us. For the first time, we get a chance to talk to her since she announced she's running for mayor of New Orleans. We're going to begin by talking about the power outage that stifled 52,000 customers in the city of New Orleans, left them in the dark without warning. In the heat, without air conditioning, shuttering businesses, and leaving many in extreme discomfort. And we've gotten conflicting reports about how it happened and why it happened. We'll find out what City Councilwoman Helena Moreno has been hearing and what she is going to be doing to get answers. We'll also ask her about her campaign for mayor and what she feels like are the most important issues as we head into this mayoral race. After that, we're going to get you updated on efforts to lower the highest in the nation insurance rates, which we have right here in the state of Louisiana. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry today talking about the bills in the legislative session that is winding down and giving us an update on how things are going in an effort to lower our nation's highest insurance rates right here in Louisiana. Right now, though, I want to welcome in New Orleans City Councilwoman Helena Moreno. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, it's like I get asked to come on Newell's show all the time, and I show up on Newell's show, and where's Newell?
Yeah, well, I guess that's just the way it works sometimes. I'm glad I could be here with you, and we'd be more than happy to have you come back on when Newell returns.
I appreciate that.
I imagine we'll be talking to you quite a bit in the next few months, a little thing called the mayor's race going on.
Yeah, I think that's coming up soon.
Yes. Before we get to that, though, I know we had asked you to come on to talk about the power outages. The 52,000 New Orleans customers amongst the 100,000 in our region that with no warning, no notice, and not a whole lot of explanation even to this point, lost their electricity when it was 91 degrees outside with a heat index of 105. Businesses on the busy Memorial Day weekend suddenly having to shutter, fairs and festivals having to shut down because of no electricity. And, you know, we've gotten conflicting reports about what led to the regional transmission organization, MISO, ordering Entergy to shut off the more than 50,000 customers in the city and 100,000 around the area. Some reports say it was too much demand, not enough supply. Others say it was mismanagement of the grid and even corporate greed. So what are you hearing?
Wow. I mean, I'll say this. This is just a really bizarre situation. I think just so that your listeners understand on what we're really talking about when you talk about this, you know, regional transmission organization or independent system that we now keep talking about so much called MISO. Some call it MISO like the soup, but it's not. It's called.
It makes me want Japanese
MISO.
Food when people call it
right,
MISO.
Right, exactly. Maybe for lunch, right? So MISO is, ultimately an independent transmission system that Entergy Corporation as a whole, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Entergy New Orleans, the corporation as a whole entered voluntarily, I want to say like 12 years ago or so, and I can get into why they entered MISO in a little bit. But so they entered this, it's really a power pool and marketplace for energy. And MISO, as this independent organization, and by the way, there's many different ones across the country, they are the ones who really make sure that the grid, and MISO goes all the way from Canada to Louisiana, that the states within their territory, that the grid is balanced. And so when there's, you know, severe weather, like it's super cold or it's super hot, you know, they ask for certain modifications in usage of energy so that the grid can become balanced. Because if you have a huge surge of usage without the right types of preparations in advance of it, you can have really catastrophic impacts. Everything from, you know, substations literally, you know, tripping offline or blowing up. Like, it can be a real catastrophic issue if we have, you know, ultimately too much usage and not enough power running through our grid. Okay, so that being said, I'm sure that your listeners and you as well know that in years past, you have seen Entergy and Clico reach out to its customers and even go to the media saying, hey guys, you know, demand is really high right now. We're asking you, you know, in the summer, like, please don't run your air conditioners at like 60 degrees, you know, and please don't run all your appliances at the same time right now.
Right. And we get those warnings when it looks like we're headed towards demand outstripping supply. They give us an opportunity to conserve so we don't have a problem. We didn't get that this time.
And so there are actually, and I pulled them up, and they're actually online too on MISO's website, by the way, if you go to MISOEnergy.org. And so if you go to this website anyway, it's got all the different warnings that have to happen before we get to a max gen event, which is like, oh my gosh, like, we have to start load shedding and we're going to have, you know, blackouts in certain areas. And so really you start with the conservation of some power plants and things like, or I'm sorry, putting more power plants online and things like that. You talk about conservation, you put the weather alerts out, then you go to like a minimum general alert. And so generation alert. And so this is when now as regulators, we start getting pinged like, hey, just letting y'all know that this is happening. And then you go to a max and then you alert, and then you go to a max warning. Then you go to a max gen event 1, and then you go to a max gen event 2, 3, 4, and then you go to a max gen event 5. So we went from like nothing to like from nothing, like everything, you know, within MISO doing just fine to all the way to the last resort step. And then
there were no pings, no communications,
no pings, no nothing,
no elevation of status along the way. We went from 0 to 100 in the blink of an eye.
In a blink of an eye. So, of course, I start hearing about all these power outages, and I start getting these notifications like, hey, there's an outage here, an outage here. And so I call the CEO of Entergy New Orleans, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? And she's like, we are all, everyone from Entergy is like heading over to figure out like what the heck is happening here, because they got a three-minute notice that they had to immediately start load shedding. So to me, you know, I'm like, okay, what went down here? So there's several factors I think we really need to look at. Okay, is this a forecasting issue from MISO that they just got completely wrong? Because I get it that there were two nuclear plants that were down, but one was down for routine maintenance and the other one had to have repairs done, but that went down several days before this
event. So they knew it was offline.
Before this event. So they knew it was off, and so therefore you should have projections on, you've got two big power plants in Louisiana, one in St. Francisville, the other one in St. Charles Parish, that are down. So then you make projections accordingly. So was the forecasting all wrong with MISO, or did something else happen? You know, did something else go online? Like, what caused this significant emergency where no one had any warning? So, you know, that to me is really concerning, so much so that myself and Councilmember Morrell, who's the chair of utilities, that we are actually going to send a communication to FERC asking them, and FERC is the oversight commission for MISO. They're the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and we're going to send notice to them that we need them to review this incident, like what really went down. Obviously, we're going to be having a meeting in city council chambers next week on June 3rd at 10 o'clock in the morning on this issue, where we're going to have representatives from MISO and from Entergy there. We have also invited the two commissioners from the PSC who are representatives of the area impacted. So that's Commissioner Scrimetta and also Commissioner Lewis to attend this meeting. We're actually going to invite them to sit on the dais with us to be able to ask questions as well. And so, you know, we have to go down this fact-finding mission now so that we can get to the bottom of this and ensure that this doesn't happen again. So if it's a forecasting issue with MISO, okay, well then what are we doing to make sure that the forecasting isn't wrong anymore? And I think what's interesting too is that I'm wondering if they use GSF modeling, because GSF modeling is National Weather Service modeling. And of course, the National Weather Service has been having a whole series of different cuts. So is that impacting modeling? I'd like to figure that piece out. And if it was something else that went wrong that led to this emergency, well, then what exactly was that? And then, you know, I will say this, though. We do need additional transmission improvements throughout Louisiana and also throughout South MISO, which is something that I've been pushing for since after Hurricane Ida. And while we have seen major transmission upgrades in MISO North, and it's roughly they approved, I think, like $24 billion worth of transmission improvements to MISO North, we have not seen that level of transmission improvements approved for MISO South, or even the connectivity between MISO North and MISO South, just so that we have more opportunities to be receiving powers in all parts of MISO and not just be so much in an island. So obviously a lot to go through, but we have to make sure that we prevent this from happening again. And we, you know, will be really leaning on FERC, who oversees MISO, to make sure that they do a proper review and that we get to the bottom of what went wrong.
Yeah, it's clear something went horribly wrong. Things did not happen as they're supposed to. And as you pointed out, you didn't get pinged. Those early alerts didn't go out. We didn't see the progression of movement toward a blackout. Why not? What happened so horribly wrong in the plans for this that normally have worked, it appears, since we've not had to deal with this since MISO started overseeing this portion of the grid? And really, in the last 25 years, we've not had any mandatory blackouts, brownouts, or anything else here in Greater New Orleans. Yeah, something had to go horribly wrong.
Let me stop you there. We did have one. You may recall during COVID, and this was that Mardi Gras. Remember that Mardi Gras when it was so cold, and it was during COVID, where it's like Mardi Gras was canceled, but it was also incredibly cold that Mardi Gras night. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. And now that you bring it up, I do recall them telling us the grid was in danger because of the extreme cold and the sudden spike in electrical usage, primarily to heat things up, people's homes and businesses.
Yes, exactly. So during that time, there was a major load shed event in the city of New Orleans. And so that load shed, you know, began. And unfortunately, that load shed was not done well by Entergy. There were some issues with their command center, and I think how some things were labeled and how some things were being metered, where they actually were told to shed load, but they shed way too much than they needed to. So they put many more people in the dark than they needed to. Plus, they also shut off the transmission line or the line that goes into the sewage and water board. So critical infrastructure. So after that happened, you know, obviously we had to go and have a very serious meeting, and we found out that more load was shed than needed to. From that point on, Entergy has made some significant revisions to ensure that when they are shedding load, that it's done accurately, and also to make sure that the lines going to critical infrastructure like the sewage and water board are the last resort, the absolute last resort. So I guess if there is any type of silver lining, is that no critical infrastructure was taken offline during the load shed. But I do want to know why New Orleans, you know, bore the brunt of it. Out of the Entergy territories, we had the largest amount of outages.
Yeah, more than half.
Than
we're in
any
the
other
city.
Pairs. Yeah, we had more than half. So Jefferson, Plaquemine, and St. Bernard in the Entergy territory also had outages. But the amount of outages that we had in New Orleans were more than all three of those other parishes combined. So we need to take a look at that as to, like, wait a second, why did New Orleans bear the brunt of this? And because, you know, that was the issue back when we had the shedding, the load shed back when we had the freeze as well. So those are other things that we're going to have to look into as well. You know, how was it determined who was going to get their power cut?
Yeah, and what we've heard initially, and I know you're going to get down to the real truth of the matter in those hearings starting on Tuesday, was that Entergy said they didn't have time to pick and choose who to turn it off to. They just had to, because they were given 3 to 5 minutes to suddenly turn off 70-some-odd thousand customers, then the additional ones with Clico. And so many questions, and it is very, very... I guess comforting that at least we know you. We've talked to public service commissioners that subpoenas are already going out. Hearings are already set. And there really is an effort to find out what happened. We know we will continue to follow this. Yeah. I would be remiss if we had you on the line and I didn't at least spend a little time talking to you about your mayoral campaign. So can you stick around a few minutes and we'll do that right after this?
Yeah, and I'm also happy to continue to talk about, you know, what steps moving forward, because I've heard all these things about, do we stay in MISO? Do we move to another system? And those are really important things to consider, too, because it could be good, could be bad, could be super costly. And I'm happy to talk about those things, too.
We're talking with Helena Moreno, New Orleans City Councilwoman. We'll be right back and get some more answers to more questions and talk to her about what she thinks are the real issues facing the city of New Orleans as we get closer and closer to the official launch of the mayoral campaign. In fact, we're less than 45 days away from qualifying now and finding out who's going to be the next mayor of New Orleans. Helena Moreno wants to be that person. Let's find out why after this.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
WWL. We have the honor of talking with Helena Moreno right now here on WWL. Helena, like you, I came to New Orleans as an adult because of a job opportunity in broadcasting and fell in love with this city and this region and this state and decided to stay here, especially after Hurricane Katrina, to make sure that this city would survive and thrive, and have dedicated myself to that for the last, 28 years. And I know that you came here as well for a job and you chose to stay here and make a living. And now you're choosing to run for mayor of New Orleans at a time when we're seeing a lot of problems in this city. We're seeing population constantly shrinking. We're seeing people leaving. We're seeing blight growing. We're seeing issue after issue after issue that seems to go unaddressed. So I wanted to ask you, why do you want to be the mayor of New Orleans now? And what do you see as the real issues in this race?
Sure, Dave. Thanks for that question. And, you know, you're right. I came here for a job, but honestly, New Orleans is really the only place I've really been able to call home. Before I came here, and I was in my early 20s, I think I was like 22 when I came here, I lived in many different cities. I think most people know that I was born in Mexico, lived there as a little girl, lived in Washington, D.C., Dallas, Houston, Savannah, Georgia, many different places until I came to New Orleans and fell in love with this city. And it was after Hurricane Katrina that I really shifted. And look, Dave, all I thought I ever wanted to be was just be a journalist, to be a news reporter and a news anchor. And I was those things. And I never in a million years would have thought I was going to be anything else but that, because that's what I always dreamed to be since I was a kid. But then Hurricane Katrina happened. It changed my life as it changed many other people's lives. And I decided to go into public service, which then led me to being elected to the Louisiana legislature and then obviously to the city council. And the reason why I'm running for mayor is I've been sitting in the legislative branch of government here in the city of New Orleans. And the legislative branch of government, as we all know, does not run operations of the city. We appropriate budgets, we pass different laws, we deal with land use issues. And I can't tell you how many times I have requested of the executive branch that does run operations and does implement how the city runs and the deliverables for the people of the city, and have said, let's do these things to make sure that we keep the lights on in the city of New Orleans. Let's do these things to make sure that we improve response times for NOPD. Let's do these things to make sure we pay vendors on time. And I can go on and on and on. And the initiatives that I push forward, and sometimes even through ordinance, have either been slow walked or not implemented at all. And so as I started to see, you know, my friends and even members of my own family here leave New Orleans because they were fed up and frustrated with the quality of life. They were fed up and frustrated with the lack of opportunity. I went to my husband about 2 years ago and said, what if I ran for mayor? And my husband, Chris, you know, fully supported that. And it's because of his full support and my family's full support that I can go into this mayor's race with full calmness, knowing that if I do get elected, I will have their support, because it is a sacrifice. And I plan on being a 24/7 mayor. To be a good mayor of New Orleans, the people of New Orleans have to be your number one priority. And that's what I am pledging to ensure, that the people of New Orleans are my number one priority. And yes, of course, you know, Dave, we have so many problems right now, but the frustrating piece for me is that we have a model to fix our longstanding issues, and that is working with urgency through coordination and collaboration. And the reason I know this model works is because we saw it work during Super Bowl. At the directive of the mayor, she said all city departments have to meet every single week with our outside stakeholders, with Entergy, with the state, DOTD, state police, GNO Inc., you name it. And because of this level of coordination and working with urgency, we got the city in shape for Super Bowl. But we shouldn't just wait for a Super Bowl for that level of services for the people of New Orleans. So under my administration, that's going to be the standard, because that's what the people of New Orleans deserve. And I'm really passionate about this because I'm so frustrated by seeing where we're at and knowing where we could be. We live in one of the most amazing cities, not in this nation, but in this world. And if we got the basics right, the sky's the limit. I mean, I talked to a mother the other day, and she was telling me about how in this city, just the morale of living in the city is so low, because as she takes her kids to school and gets on Claiborne and notices that the streetlights are out, and then it's like still notices that there's patchwork on the road and she's late because of the conditions on the street, already her day is off to a bad start, not because of anything that she did, but of how the city of New Orleans is being run. So if we can get these basics right, get the street lights working, get the traffic lights working, get our road projects, you know, completed quickly and not taking a year and a half to do, then you're going to see a big change in the city of New Orleans. You know, and then ultimately, I'll also say this too, Dave, I really think that you need a mayor who needs to say that we want New Orleans to be one that is open for business. Right now, the safety and permits department is a disaster. And everyone in this administration knows it, yet they do nothing to try to fix it. It takes months to get an occupational license in the city of New Orleans. You are trying to start a business in the city of New Orleans.
Give your money to the city of New Orleans.
Yeah. Give your money. And so,
and you're stymied,
you know,
at every level.
Yeah, so I, obviously on safety and permits, revamping that office is going to be top for me, making sure we do a national search for a CAO. The chief administrative officer is the person who is supposed to be running operations of the city, making sure that all departments are being coordinated and working efficiently together. And doing a national search, in my opinion, is important. There may be some wonderful candidates in our city or in our region, but we should look at, you know, potentially CAOs and city managers in other cities who potentially could come here and do a great job. And then also making sure that I have top-notch department heads and top people working on the mayor's team, not friends and family, but subject experts, and making sure that these people are as dedicated as I am to prioritizing the people of New Orleans and making sure that they get the services that they deserve.
I hear you talk a lot about collaboration, working together, common goals, because the current mayor has been shrouded in conflict with the city council, with the media, with business leaders, with others. It's just fight after fight after fight. So what I'm hearing you say is if you're the next mayor, you would seek to stop all this fighting and lead everyone toward common goals.
No doubt about it. And I look forward to working with the next city council. And the thing is, it's not hard to work in partnership with city council members. It's actually real easy. I've had some good leaders who have worked with me when I was a member of the legislature, and seen how good mayors work with their city councils. It's real easy, Dave. What you do is you go to each council member and you talk to them about what issues they're passionate about, and then you bring them into those issues to help you solve those issues, or what's really important to them in their district, and you help them solve those issues. And guess what? When we solve those issues, not only is it great for the individual districts and even for the individual district council members, it's great for the entire city, and it's also great for the person who is mayor, because you're all getting these things done and you're getting it done together. So there doesn't have to be this combative type of relationship. When a city council member, you know, comes to me in the future and says, I would like to get this done, or I have an idea about how to improve whatever issue that we're facing in the city, comes to me, I'm going to look at that as a partnership and assistance. I'm not going to look at that as somebody trying to one-up me or trying to be mayor or trying to take control, blah, blah, blah. I'm so sick of that type of attitude. Either we're all going to come together and move the city forward, or we're going to end up going backwards. And I feel like I'm the only person who can really be that person who has the level of experience to really understand the issues, the level of collaborative approach to be able to work with the next city council, and also the person who really understands the state legislature and state operations to make sure that we don't have any type of state takeover or control, but that we have partnerships with the state. And I think that piece is also really important. And in the legislature, I certainly learned how to navigate that.
You know, we hear all the time, and I feel it, I think, as much as you do. We're tired of the fighting. We're tired of the complaining. Yes. and the conflicts, and the constantly taking a position of taking somebody else on instead of working together to improve things. That all having been said, and we point out a lot of problems, one clear area where we've seen success the last couple of years is in the fight against crime. And the police chief
no
has
doubt.
Said she wants to keep her job under the next mayor. Do you think you would like Ann Kirkpatrick to continue to lead the NOPD for you?
The crime reduction, I'll tell you this, has been really remarkable. If you take a look at February of 2025, we had the least amount of murders since the 1960s. Okay? I mean, that's unbelievable where we're at. And the way that this was done was obviously because of Chief Kirkpatrick working very diligently with our state and also federal partners and going after the worst of the worst out there. Also, she finally started doing something that I really had been leaning in on, is hiring more civilians into the NOPD to take away work that commissioned officers don't have to be doing. Like, for example, you get your bike stolen from your garage, you don't need a commissioned police officer to come to your house to take that report. You can get a trained civilian to come, take that report, and then send it to a commissioned police officer to sign off on. And then the other piece, too, I'll mention, is that the city council also made significant investments in summer job employment, boosting it from roughly a couple hundred spots during the summer to, you know, about 2,000. We did that 2 years in a row, and also investing millions of dollars in nonprofits working in the community, really boots on the ground, like Roots of Music, like Son of a Saint, all these different organizations. We started really pouring money into them instead of trying to create the city's own programs that are not really working. So all those things, in my opinion, are what led to this crime reduction. And I'll say this, I mean, I'm a very results-oriented person. And so you know, obviously we still have several months to go, and Ann and I obviously would have to go, Chief Kirkpatrick and I would have to go discuss all this. But if we keep seeing this level of results, we keep seeing, you know, these level of points being put on the board, then I can't turn my back on that. And so, you know, obviously, you know, time will tell and many things can happen, as we know, especially the way 2025 is going. But I'm a very results oriented person, and I want to make sure that whoever is the next police chief is going to continue us on this trend of crime reduction.
And that having been said, there are problems. NOPD is still at its lowest ranks in modern history, barely 900 commissioned officers, and they're really struggling to build those ranks. What do you think you could do as mayor to attract more or hire more police officers and give them the actual numbers that they really need, 1,200, 1,300, 1,500, whatever that is, to more effectively do the job that they've been doing amazingly so depleted?
Yeah. So I have told Ann Kirkpatrick that this is the area that she is not doing well in. And, you know, we roughly have, when you add the recruits, Dave, we roughly are stuck around 940. So that we've been stuck there for the past couple of years. And I have said, you know, that if we don't start seeing results soon, that when I come in as mayor, I plan on bringing in, you know, a third party, you know, headhunting type of group to come in and help us in the recruiting side, because this is what other cities have now started to do. The thing with recruiting is, remember, it's like first you get the applicant in, and then you have to be, you know, very much about constantly contacting the applicant, making sure that they start, that they continue to follow through the steps to get them in as applicants, as recruits. And this is something that just a few people in an office can't, in my opinion, and are not, in my opinion, doing well at this point. We also have the least amount of applicants now than we've seen in many, many years. So even our applicant pool is down. So, you know, a billboard campaign or something like that, like what I'm hearing is being proposed, is not going to be what solves this. We need really, you know, many, many people who are doing a level of outreach and level of advertising to get more applicants in. And I think that, you know, that will be something that helps boost our numbers. But at the same time, the reforms within the NOPD need to continue, making sure that you have an environment, a workplace environment, where people want to go to, not only, of course, the physical structures that NOPD officers are working in and the equipment that they have, but also just the overall personal environmental type of atmosphere that they have as well, making sure that people feel like there is a fair process for promotions, making sure that it's not about who you know, but it's about what you know as you move up the ranks of NOPD, which I know that Chief Kirkpatrick has really been working hard to do.
Helena Moreno, I could ask you questions all day. I know we've kept you longer than we said we would, and I really appreciate your joining us, and we look forward to talking to you more regularly. And I hope if you are elected mayor, we can get you on all the time here on WWL with some regular show or something like that, because the people sure miss hearing from their leaders.
Yeah. No, I would really appreciate that. And I would commit to doing that if elected mayor, that for sure. I would make the commitment to come on WWL at a regularly scheduled rotation so that you and, of course, your listeners could get the information that they need about what's happening with their city.
I look forward to, I know we'll talk to you before the election, and we'll get more details on your platform, your approach, and what you would do if elected mayor. Helena Moreno, thank you for giving us a little more time than we had asked for initially. We'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Rutland City Councilwoman Helena Moreno, mayoral candidate here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen. God, wouldn't it be nice for a mayor who actually talked to the people, for a mayor who actually worked with the community, for a mayor who actually was out there leading in a city that desperately needs that kind of leadership. I don't know if Helena Moreno is going to win. We've had the other candidates on already, and we'll continue to have candidates on. But God, I hope some of these things aren't just rhetoric and talk, and that whoever the next mayor is, we can get leadership, true leadership, that we really need. We need lower insurance rates, too. When we get back, we'll find out what the governor just said about the effort to lower auto insurance rates here on WWL.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry has just signed a package of bills he says will lower our auto insurance rates. Tyler Bridges, staff writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, joins us live now. Tyler, what did you hear from the governor today? And do analysts believe these bills really will lower our auto insurance rates, the highest in the nation?
Yeah, I'll take that second question first, Dave. I don't think anybody can be certain what is going to happen. What the governor tried to do in signing these bills today is saying he took a very balanced approach with the legislation this year. A number of measures passed that the insurance industry wanted to bring down car insurance rates. And so the governor said they should come down as much as 10%. The industry, though, says a final bill signed by the governor, passed by the legislature, will offset all of those gains because of a couple of provisions in the bill. And it was notable, Dave, that while the governor said that he passed a lot of bills asked for by the business sector, the business sector was not included in the press conference because, again, of House Bill 148, which is the bill that the insurance industry says is so bad will outweigh all the good bills that have passed.
So it's a good news, bad news situation that we have legislation that should bring rates down, but then we have insurance rates that the industry says will drive rates up. So again, we're left. And like you, Tyler, I've been covering this issue, I guess, for 29 years now. And every year someone promises they're going to bring our insurance rates down. And well, it hadn't happened yet. So maybe it's not going to happen again.
Well, and that's a good point. And that's something the governor has talked about, his frustration. There have been bills passed in the past that have not brought down insurance rates. He said the package of bills passed last year and then those passed this year that he signed into law should bring down the rates. He is also the bill that the insurance industry objects to, also Insurance Commissioner Tim Temple objects to. That bill gives the insurance commissioner greater authority to reject rate increases. And people are calling that the Blame Tim Temple bill, that if rates don't go down, the governor will then pin the blame on Commissioner Temple. So I don't think it's a clear picture exactly, Dave, what's going to happen going forth. Certainly, the governor got everything that he wanted, including the opportunity to blame the commissioner of insurance if rates don't come down.
Let's listen to what Governor Landry just said real quick.
But we also addressed other bills that we were promised would help to lower auto insurance rates as well. In fact, we have now, in just 16 months, done more than any other governor in the history of this state when it comes to tort reform.
Tort reform, obviously, one of the big bears in all of this. The trial lawyers have fought against tort reform very successfully for year after year after year in Louisiana. Tyler, why should we believe, and do you believe, based on what the governor said, that these tort reform measures will hold up in court, will ultimately remain in law, and will bring our insurance rates down?
Yeah, Dave, I think it's too difficult to know exactly what's going to happen. Again, you can point to measures that the legislature has just passed that the insurance industry and business wanted and that the governor wanted that should bring down rates. But on the other hand, the insurance industry and the commissioner of insurance are saying that one bill is so bad that it will outweigh all of those other ones. So I think we'll see in the coming days, weeks, months, whether rates come down. I don't think we've heard the last on this topic. And if you've been covering this for 29 years, you probably don't either.
No. And I know that one thing that lawyers like to do is sue and challenge laws because, well, they're lawyers. So I will be shocked and amazed if we don't see some of the trial attorneys going to court to try and kill some of this legislation that the governor just signed.
Yeah, the trial attorneys have traditionally been a powerful lobby in the legislature. It's hard to point to any bills that passed that they wanted. They were able to stop some bills from going through, but the governor this year sided with the insurance industry on a number of bills that the insurance industry and that business community wanted. So again, it appears to be a mixed bag. The governor has been very consistent throughout. He noted that 50 days ago when the legislature convened, he called for a balanced approach. And he can point to today bills that the insurance industry likes and that the insurance industry does not like. And I think he has positioned himself about where the people of Louisiana are from. I don't think the polls show that some people blame insurance companies for the high rates. Other people blame the trial lawyers.
Tyler Bridges, we look forward to reading what you write about this on NOLA.com and the Times Speaking in the New Orleans Advocate. And thank you so much for joining us to tell us what the governor had to say today and for bringing us the real information about what we should expect going forward, which is we don't know what's going to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tyler Bridges here on WWL. I'd like to be optimistic. I'd like to think that the highest in the nation insurance rates are going to come down because of all this. I'd like to believe the governor when he says that we're going to see a 10% reduction in our auto insurance rates. But I got to be skeptical, folks, because a lot of people have said a lot of things before, and it just has not happened. We're back after this. Man, we packed a whole lot into that hour. If you missed any of it, use the Odyssey app. Go to the Newell Norman Show page. Back it up and listen to it because Helena Moreno made some fantastic points about the threats that our electrical grid faces and the answers we need to get to find out why the power went out and how do we keep that from happening again like it happened Sunday. And then laid out for us what she hopes to do as mayor of New Orleans. So, so different than what the current mayor is doing. And then you just heard Tyler Bridges. The governor says insurance rates coming down 10%. Maybe. We're back after the news.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America. For America.